sometimes characters are emotionally broken, but she's also physically broken.
I didn't give my heroine an easy time in this book. Looking back, I thought I really heaped a lot of troubles on her, because 2 years before the book opens, the story opens, she's been paralyzed from the waist down in a horrific car accident, which also killed her lover. And she has huge feelings of guilt about that accident, because she feels she was partly responsible for it. And also she has to live for the rest of her life with the consequences. And she finds that very hard, because she's been a very attractive athletic woman in the past, and suddenly she finds herself confined to a wheelchair, and she finds that unbearable. So she's very traumatized as the book opens. She's just managed to get hold of a job, which she didn't find easy, because her boss in her other job told her she wasn't psychologically ready to come back. So she manages to get a job, but it's in a very dead-end place and a very scary place. And that's where she meets Bethany, who is the teenage killer, who's the other main protagonist in the story.
Bethany is very creepy young lady.
She is.
And although she actually gets less creepy as the book goes along.
I think that's only because you get used to her.
Yeah?
She doesn't really change very much in the book. You know, there's this theory that characters should change, but she doesn't really change very much at all.
She doesn't, but you understand her, finally.
You do, and the journey is more yours than it is hers, in that sense. It's the reader who does the emotional work of growing to like Bethany, because I really set out with her to make her journey a very, very small one. The furthest she goes, really, is from calling her therapist Spaz to calling her Gabrielle, which is her real name. And that's evidence of how far she gets in her development.
It's a big chance to take as a writer, though, to make your reader make the emotional journey. Why did you choose to do that?
Because I think readers are extremely intelligent people, and why shouldn't they do part of the work? I think readers, we all read. We always do part of the work. Half the imaginative work is done in the reading process. We're only setting off that imaginative process when we write. When I write something down, when I write an image down, when you read that image, if I paint some kind of picture, when you read it, you're going to have a completely different picture in your head from the one I had in my head, and so is every other reader. So every book is unique according to who's reading it.
Bethany is institutionalized for what seems like a pretty good reason.
Yes, she murdered her mother. She stabbed her mother to death with a screwdriver.
Through the eye, right?
Well, the final stab wound was through the eye. I think that's the one that finished her off, yes.
It's kind of what finished me off for liking her at first.
You're not meant to like her at first. And she's meant to be a very creepy, very scary figure. And especially because she has been extremely violent, Gabrielle is especially scared of her, because she's in a wheelchair. She feels very vulnerable. As it turns out, she's far more emotionally vulnerable than she is physically vulnerable with Bethany, because Bethany's very, very good at pinpointing everybody's weak spot, and she goes straight for Gabrielle's very weakest spots. What Bethany's doing is she's making very weird predictions about natural disasters. Now, when Gabrielle discovers that these disasters are actually happening, that's a very frightening thing to realize, because you've got the potential for disaster and Bethany's warning about it. But who's going to believe Bethany? And who is going to believe Bethany's therapist? Nobody. And so the man who runs the hospital takes a very professional approach, which is you don't believe the delusions of insane, criminally insane minors. Why should you? But there does come a point when Gabrielle is forced to confront the fact that she does believe these warnings that Bethany's making. And then she doesn't know what to do with it. She's got to do something, but it's very hard for her to find an outlet.
It's fair to say this is like the worst of the worst case environmental disaster.
It is the worst of the worst, because actually, I mean, what we're living through now, what we're experiencing now, is far more dramatic and serious, because it's far more likely to happen. Whereas what happens in my book has happened in the past, but not in the human past. The last time it happened was 55 million years ago, when probably a series of earthquakes unleashed methane from the seabed, and it all came whooshing up. It behaves a bit like polystyrene, and then it explodes on contact with the air and enters the atmosphere and heats it dramatically because it's such a powerful greenhouse gas. I talked to a geologist about this. I wanted to write about global warming, but because of the time scale, I needed it to be more sudden than is happening now, because what's happening now will affect our grandchildren. But in our own lives, it'll still affect us, but it won't have that dramatic effect. I wanted to somehow bring it home, that it could be very dramatic. So I spoke to a geologist who specialised in this sudden global warming that took place 55 million years ago, and she and I discussed, okay, how could such an accident happen now? And she said, well, obviously it's through methane drilling, which is actually happening in an experimental way already. Methane has the potential to be a fantastic energy source, but it also has the potential to be enormously destructive. It makes tar sands look like a children's tea party.
The book is The Rapture. I've been speaking with the author Liz Jensen, and The Rapture, published by Bond Street Books, Doubleday, Canada.